the first of the three broad areas of work to have more than 500 missionaries serving. When Dr. Rankin became executive secretary of the Foreign Mission Board, all of the missionaries of the board combined totaled only 500 and a few additional. We have as many now in Latin America as we had when Dr. Rankin became executive secretary in 1945. Leading in the work of that area is Dr. Frank K. Means, who is tonight in the city of Rio de Janeiro helping to prepare the way for the Baptist World Alliance meeting and consulting with missionaries in that great country. Coming to speak to us on behalf of that area and on behalf of Dr. Means is Dr. Rogers M. Smith, Associate Administrative Associate to the Executive Secretary, himself deeply committed in heart to the work in Latin America, having been there and going again just shortly, a man whose heart has burned with the love of missions, and he is going to come and tell us about the work of the Lord Jesus Christ in this great area immediately to the south. Dr. Smith.
I regret as much as you do that Dr. Frank K. Means, the Secretary for Latin America, cannot be with us tonight. But as Dr. Colton has explained, he is in Latin America carrying on very important work and making preparation for the coming Baptist World Alliance. In these few moments that we have to look to our neighbors to the south, I would like for us to first think about this section of the world. One of the correspondents for the New York Times has said, Latin America, the conglomeration of 20 continental, isthmian, and insular republics which occupy the huge region stretching between the United States, Mexican, and the Gulf of border, and the Gulf of Mexico on the north, and the Drake Passage and the outer fringes of the Antarctica in the south, enters the 1960s in the midst of a quickening revolution of political systems, economic changes, and social patterns. Episodes of intense revolutionary activity crowded the 1950s. The social revolution in Bolivia in 1952, the ouster of dictatorships in Argentina, Peru, Colombia, and Venezuela, and the continuing Cuban Revolution of 1959. These episodes were dramatic milestones in a larger historical process, which is certain to go on for years until Latin America has achieved an equilibrium between the demands of its rapidly expanding populations and the availability of resources. With varying degrees of urgency in the individual republics, Latin America's basic problem is now posed in these terms: political upheavals, rabid nationalism, economic crises, and social pressures and explosions. Unrelated to each, as they may often seem, all form part of this process of revolutionary transformation from an older order to a new, and thus to the eventual emergence of a new society. Herbert L. Matthews, also of the New York Times, writing in his book, The United States and Latin America, has said, "No excuses are necessary for making a study of United States relations with Latin America. The importance of the region to us is only equaled, except for specialists, by our ignorance of it. It has been Latin America which has impinged on our consciences by such events as the Nixon trip, the revolutions in Venezuela and Cuba, and the unrest in the Caribbean. Here is a world at our doorstep on which, to a considerable degree, we depend for our existence as a world power. If we are deprived of the raw materials of the areas and its markets, our economy and security would be gravely, perhaps vitally, affected. It is an area where no hostile power can be allowed to gain a foothold, for strategically, this is our, quote, soft underbelly, end quote. We cannot win the Cold War in Latin America, but we can lose it there. Neutralism or an intense Yankee phobia could hurt us badly. A day will come when Russia will make a very serious bid for Latin America. In terms of the United States trade and investment, Canada and Latin America outweigh the whole rest of the world put together. Yet our foreign policy interests expressed in the Cold War are directed far more to Europe and Asia. So we see a paradox of a financial and economic axis running north and south, and a political and military axis running east and west. Samuel Inman outlines the history of Spanish-American Republic since colonial times as follows. 1810 to 1825, a time of struggle for political independence. 1825 to 1875, anarchy and confusion. 1875 to 1930, organization and peace. Since 1930, revolutions for economic independence. Yes, Mr. Sooks of the New York Times again says that the late 1950s brought a clear trend toward representative democracy in Latin America. The dictatorships in Argentina, Venezuela, Colombia, and Cuba were overthrown by revolutions. Idria, the dictator of Peru, stepped down voluntarily, permitting the restoration of a democracy. As the 1956-60 decade opens, 15 out of the 20 Latin American republics have governments of their free choice. The other five, the Dominican Republic, Paraguay, Nicaragua, Haiti, and Cuba, there are governments under dictatorships or systems that approach dictatorships. Dr. Means, in his book, which is just off the press, Across the Bridge, discusses briefly some of the problems of Latin America as follows. First, communism. He says it is a force to be reckoned with in South America. The party is legal and active in Argentina, Bolivia, Ecuador, Mexico, and Uruguay. It is illegal and suppressed in Guatemala, Honduras, Costa Rica, Colombia, and Venezuela. While it is also illegal in Peru and Paraguay, the communists are working undercover. He says that there is a very strong communist party in Brazil, which naturally affects in many ways the Spanish neighbors around the great country of Brazil. Communists are telling the story in Latin America. They print 135 publications in Spanish and Portuguese. Radio Moscow is on the air in Spanish 100 hours a week. Hubert Heron, in A History of Latin America, points out that the concentration of wealth in a few hands, the misery of the masses, meager pay, bad housing, inadequate food, and lack of health facilities encourage communism in Latin America. Dr. Means goes on to point out that the combined economies of all Latin American republics amounts to only 1/8 of the economy of the United States, and the per capita income of the average Latin American is 1/8 the per capita income of the American. The growing population is another real problem in Latin America. The population is increasing at a rate of 2.5% a year. Robert C. Cook states that by the year 2000, Latin Americans may be exceeded only by Asia's teeming millions. Almost twice as many people will live in Latin America 40 years from now as will live in the United States. There are approximately 190 million people there at the present time. Another problem is in the economic area. This problem is aggravated by, one, a duplication of products, two, a common market, three, inflation, four, sharp price fluctuations, and a need for outside aid of tremendous proportions. There is inadequate medical need and help in Latin America. Illiteracy is a major problem. In some countries, there is just about 10% illiteracy, but in others, it is as high as 70%. Now, we are interested in these political, economic, and social problems of Latin America because they will affect in a vital way our mission work among our neighbors to the south. However, our main concern is the spiritual condition of these neighbors. Dr. Means says that there is no dearth of religion in Latin America. The early Indians worshiped by means of animistic forms. As spirit worshipers, they found deities all about them in nature. Superstitions, traditions, and taboos abounded. Roman Catholicism was introduced into Latin America by the early explorers. Some felt that the Indians were not capable of receiving Christianity, but zealous missionaries came to the New World, and most of the Indians were brought to an outward acceptance of Roman Catholicism. Mass converts were claimed by these early missionaries. The Spanish conqueror, Cortes, 12 years after the first landing of the Spanish, wrote that the Franciscan friars and priests and workers had converted 1 million Indians to Roman Catholicism. The Indians practiced a very diluted form of Roman Catholicism. In Latin America, Roman Catholicism has emphasized dogma and formalism rather than morality and ethics. As we look then at Latin America, these neighbors to the south of us, these wonderful, friendly people. Yes, some of them have shown that they were not so friendly maybe in instances of recent weeks and months and years, but basically they have been very friendly to the United States, and we have been neighbors for 350 years and more. Now as we look at our Baptist work there in Latin America, we thank God for his blessings upon our labors. As we think of our work in Argentina and the Bahamas and Brazil and Chile and Colombia and Costa Rica and Ecuador and Guatemala and Honduras and Mexico and Paraguay and Peru and Uruguay and Venezuela, and then we look and we see our Spanish publishing house in El Paso, which sends literature not only to Central and South America, but many other places around the world. As we think of our work in this great countries, these great countries to the south, we see our missionaries, as Dr. Cawthon has indicated, more than 500 of them now working in these countries to the south. Our first missionaries were sent to Mexico in 1880. In 1881, Dr. and Mrs. W.B. Bagby opened our work in Brazil. In 1903, Dr. Saul was our pioneer yonder in Argentina, and our work was opened in Uruguay in 1911 and in Chile in 1917. And then it was 1942 before we opened work in another one of the countries of South America. But thanks be unto God, we now have representatives of Southern Baptists and representatives of Christ in all the South American republics except Bolivia. And we have the missionaries in the Bahamas and Mexico and Guatemala and Costa Rica and Honduras in Central America. As we think of these missionaries, more than 500 of them, working in approximately 100 mission stations throughout Latin America, they are there carrying on the work of Jesus Christ. You know, as we think about our work in Latin America, we say there isn't one Southern Baptist church in this vast area of the world. But we thank God that there are 1,956 Brazilian Baptist churches and Argentine Baptist churches and Chilean Baptist churches and Mexican Baptist churches that are affiliated with our mission work in these countries. And we thank God that out of these 1,956 churches, 1,355 of them are now self-supporting. And these churches have approximately 5,000 chapels and mission stations that they send workers to from week to week and month to month and year to year with the message of Jesus Christ. And there are now serving these churches and working alongside of our more than 500 missionaries, more than 1,200 national pastors. Last year, they reported approximately 15,000 baptisms in our Latin American missions. So we can be grateful to God for His blessings upon these churches, these pastors, and these approximately 200,000 members that are affiliated with these churches with whom our missionaries are working. As we think about our educational program in Latin America, we have 103 of our missionaries serving as teachers, and we have approximately 600 national co-workers working alongside of them. There are 77 kindergartens, 198 elementary schools, 21 secondary schools, 15 colleges and teacher training schools, 2 training schools for women workers, and 14 theological seminaries. We have a total of 328 schools in our Latin American area with approximately 35,000 young people enrolled, preparing themselves for citizenship, preparing themselves for Christian service, preparing themselves for church membership and service to their fellow man. As we think about our medical ministry in Latin America, we have 3 hospitals, one in Guadalajara, Mexico, one in Barranquilla, Colombia, and one in Asunción, Paraguay. And we thank God that in these hospitals there are 6 missionary doctors and 41 national doctors who work alongside of them. There are 6 missionary nurses and 76 national workers who work alongside of them in the responsibilities that are theirs. Dr. George Colmar, in speaking to our missionaries this morning, said that last year there were 44 professions of faith in the hospital in Barranquilla, Colombia. And there are many churches here in our homeland that do not report nearly that many baptisms in a year. And here is one of our missionary institutions, a medical institution that is healing the bodies of the people and yet ministering to their souls and winning and baptizing 14 as a result of their witness, the witness of the doctors and the nurses and the chaplains and the nationals there in that institution. Last year, they had approximately 5,000 inpatients and 35,000 outpatients. As we think about our publication work, the printing of the gospel, we see our publishing houses with approximately 30 of our missionaries working in this area of our work and 268 national co-workers. And they last year printed 170,000 Bibles, 2,271,000 periodicals, and they published approximately 10 million tracts and pieces of Christian literature that are sent out around the world to witness for Christ. Yes, as we think about our work in Latin America, we thank God for His blessings upon the work, and we recognize the importance of carrying the gospel to our neighbors who are so close to us, who are waiting for us to come with the message of Jesus Christ. And it is our prayer that we as Southern Baptists will, within the next few years, not have 500 missionaries in Latin America, but that we will have 1,000 missionaries in Latin America, as in the other areas, sharing with the national co-workers the message of Jesus Christ and his love.
I would like to ask that all of the Latin American missionaries will please stand. Just wherever you are, will you stand? Our missionaries from Latin America. And now will you turn around and look at this vast audience as we stand in appreciation of you and your work in Latin America. And you may be seated.
I'm confident as Dr. Smith has been speaking, your eyes have turned toward this splendid map in the background. You have seen Latin America as it is over here to our right, have recognized its strategic importance. Now immediately to my back, you see another vast area. Here is the area of Africa, and just to the north of it, Europe, and then to the right of it, the Near East. This tremendous section that may be in some respects an area of destiny. It is under the leadership of Dr. Cornell Garner, for many years professor of missions, and now God's servant to give leadership to this area of strategic importance, of great heart need, and of tremendous results in the ministry of our Savior. Dr. Garner will come and tell us about the work in this area.
This area really is three great culture regions, each with its distinctive characteristics and somewhat different, yet adjacent one to the other geographically and interrelated in many ways in intercultural contacts through the centuries. In this vast region, there live more than 700 millions of persons, almost a third of the world's population. Here we have today 437 Southern Baptist missionaries laboring in 17 different countries. By no means all of the countries of this vast and varied region, but strategically located in each of the three great culture regions. The eyes of the world today are on the continent of Africa as never before. Africa is making the headlines. It's in the news reports. The winds of change are blowing across that vast continent. New nations are in the process of coming to birth. And it's our joy and privilege and our heavy responsibility to seek to bear a Christian witness in the midst of peoples that are emerging from ways of life that are rapidly being outmoded, are taking their place among the nations of the earth, rising to their full height, and claiming a larger share of earth's good things. And in the hearts of millions of them, whether they recognize it or not, there is a deep heart hunger after God. Southern Baptist work in Africa began in Nigeria over 100 years ago when Thomas J. Bowen in 1850 set foot on that then a primitive pagan land. In these years, there has been tremendous development of the Baptist witness in Nigeria. Until today, with 206 Southern Baptist missionaries under appointment for Nigeria, a vast network of schools, five wonderful hospitals, and over 350 organized Baptist churches, with more than 600 other places where services are regularly held, making over 1,000 places where the Baptist witness is maintained, 45,000 regular members of churches, and no less than 150,000 persons whose lives are
constantly being touched by our Baptist witness. These missionaries work as an integral part of the Nigerian Baptist Convention, organized into district associations and a great national convention with its own home and foreign mission board, its own Sunday school training union and other activities, rapidly taking upon the shoulders of national leaders trained in our schools and our seminary the responsibility for directing the affairs of the convention and expanding in a work of witness throughout this great nation. For many years, our witness was heavily concentrated in the southwestern portion of the country, but a few years ago, the Nigerian Baptist Convention, with these able African pastors, helped and encouraged by our missionaries, launched an expansion program that has its aim making our Nigerian Baptist Convention literally nationwide. Not only in the great western region where the Yoruba people are in the dominance, but in the eastern region and in the vast northern region, which is thought to be dominantly Muslim but still can be reached for Christ. We're seeking to extend our witness. The Nigerian Baptist Convention, in session last week at Sapele, made a historic action as it set apart two couples, Africans, trained Nigerian workers, as the first regularly appointed foreign missionaries of the Nigerian Baptist Convention through its own Foreign Mission Board. They have been appointed for service in Sierra Leone, another West African country, and will soon be leaving for service there. This will be a high day and a signal year for the Nigerian Baptist Convention, and it was marked partly to commemorate and to signalize the year of independence. For on October the 1st, 1960, this nation, so long a British colony, with a population of 34 million, will join the ranks of free, independent, self-governing nations of the world. And our Nigerian Baptist Convention, assuming foreign mission responsibility for another country, and accepting a greater and greater share of the home mission task, there in Nigeria itself, will march forward confidently into the future. For many years, we had work only in Nigeria. That is still by far our strongest and best occupied field in Africa. But in 1947, work was extended to Ghana, then called the Gold Coast, at that time a British colony. In 1957, it became a free independent nation. The beginning of work in 1947 means only that for the first time we sent Southern Baptist missionaries there, for already there were Baptist churches in Ghana. They had been started by Nigerians who had gone there for the purposes of trade, and wherever they settled down wanted a Baptist church such as they had had back in Nigeria. They kept calling for help as these little groups came into existence. And finally, the convention in Nigeria responded by transferring a couple from that country to work in Ghana, Mr. and Mrs. Homer Littleton. Since that time, the work has been expanded, and now we have 32 Southern Baptist missionaries in Ghana. Churches have grown and developed fairly well throughout the little nation of 5 million population. We've developed a high school in Kumasi, a hospital in the great northern territory at Nalerigu, the only medical ministry available to the Mamkrusi people. We now work in 5 stations and have plans for 4 additional stations in Ghana in the immediate future.
25 organized churches with about 2,500 members are the results of these relatively few years of labors there in Ghana. And in this new free independent nation, we have the privilege today of seeking to lay Christian foundations in an emerging nation that is to play its role in the life of the world. In 1950, work was extended to southern Rhodesia. Mr. and Mrs. Clyde Dodson had been there, Southern Baptists, independently for some time, and in 1950, their support was assumed by the Foreign Mission Board, and soon others went to join them. That work has been expanded very rapidly, and in southern Rhodesia, we now have missionaries stationed in 8 different localities, and a rapidly growing convention is in progress. From the very beginning, our missionaries there decided that their field should not be only southern Rhodesia, but what was then called the Central Africa Federation. It has later come to be known as the Federation of Rhodesia and Nyasaland. They named their mission, therefore, the Central Africa Mission, and accepted as their responsibility southern Rhodesia, northern Rhodesia, and Nyasaland. Still occupied with the task of placing missionaries in southern Rhodesia, they began to lay their plans and make their prayers for enough reinforcements that they might